Hi, everyone. My name is Emily Solomon, and I'm a research associate at the Center for Housing Policy in Washington, D.C. I'd like to welcome everyone to the housingpolicy.org Live at the Forum event titled Linking Housing, Transportation, and Workforce Policies. This particular event is being held in conjunction with the Center for Housing Policy's Housing Solutions Week, an annual series of events focused on state and local strategies for responding to today's critical housing challenges. Today I'm joined by Karen Dewar of the Urban Land Institute, Minnesota, Robin Schneiderman of the Metropolitan Planning Council in Chicago, and Susan Adams of the Atlanta Neighborhood Development Partnership. The speakers are joined today to discuss two new policy briefs on regional coordination of housing, transportation, and workforce policies. The policy briefs, which were written by the Center for Housing Policy in collaboration with the Metropolitan Planning Council, are based on a series of listening sessions that took place in the Atlanta and Twin Cities regions to convene local and state governments, the workforce sector, housing and transportation agencies, and advocacy groups to discuss positive examples of coordination across silos, as well as the challenges to working across policy areas more closely. The first of the two briefs, which has a very long title, it's called How Transportation Reform Could Increase the Availability of Housing Affordable to Families with a Mix of Incomes Near Public Transit, Job Centers, and Other Essential Destinations. This brief explains how the reauthorization of federal transportation bill can incent the improved coordination of transportation, housing, and land use policy to ensure that families across a range of incomes have access to affordable housing as well as efficient, accessible transportation options. The companion brief, called Regional Coordination in Atlanta Metro and in the Twin Cities, draws from the discussions held during the listening sessions and includes the local experiences of coordinating land use, transportation, and workforce policy in Atlanta and the Twin City regions. It complements the first brief by including the local perspective on specific policy changes and comprehensive reform in federal transportation policy to better align affordable housing, transportation, and workforce objectives at the local level. Both these briefs are available online, and you can access them from the housingpolicy.org forum and from the Center for Housing Policy's publication page, which you can get to through www.nhc.org. So in a minute, I'm going to turn it over to Robin, but first I wanted to quickly review the logistics of how this event will work. For the next 30 minutes or so, you'll hear from the guest speakers about advances that have begun to address the coordination of housing, transportation, and workforce policies at the federal level, as well as specific examples from the Twin Cities and Atlanta regions. Then for 90 minutes following the call, the guest speakers will be online answering as many of your questions as they can get to you on the housingpolicy.org forum. So now I'm going to turn it over to Robin, who will provide an overview of the listening sessions the Metropolitan Planning Council and the Center for Housing Policy hosted in the context of the Federal Sustainable Communities Initiative. Turn it over to Robin.
Emily. Thanks, Emily. Could everybody hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the opportunity to participate in this forum and to the Center for Housing Policy for being such a terrific partner. Ambitious, thoughtful, thorough, innovative, prolific. I have to say I'm always grateful to have these kinds of friends in D.C. as we strive at the local level, like hopefully those of you listening to this call, to figure out where our time is most needed on the Hill, which of our best practices we could surface, and which best practices from other groups we should incorporate here in Chicagoland. For those of you who don't know, since 1934, the Metropolitan Planning Council has been dedicated to shaping a more sustainable, equitable, and competitive Chicago region. We're an independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, and we undertake our work through policy advocacy and technical assistance, largely in the areas of housing and community development, regional planning and investment, sensible growth, and frankly, all the places in between that require us to connect the dots among policymakers, developers, community leaders, and employers at the local, regional, state, and increasingly national level. Our 60-person board largely consists of Chicagoland's business and civic leaders, which brings a terrific discipline to our work, often translating classic social justice issues of concern, I think, to folks on the call, into matters of self-interest for a broader constituency. It's this last point about translating difficult issues to address the self-interest of a broader range of stakeholders that really inspired us to work with the Center for Housing Policy and leaders in Atlanta and the Twin Cities. We had planned these listening sessions even before the Obama administration had put a name to its new Sustainable Communities Partnership, which we knew was in the works, and by now you all know, is focused on aligning the policies, programs, investment strategies, and of course the goals of HUD, the Department of Transportation, and the Environmental Protection Agency. Along with most of you listening on today's call, this new focus of the Obama administration advanced a bottom-line objective that MPC, the Center, Brookings, dozens of other groups had long advocated, which was simply to make it easier to link housing, transportation, jobs, and land use at the local level. We were so excited by the big-picture commitment to this goal that we arranged the listening sessions to infuse the national discussion with the real-time barriers and opportunities facing leaders on the ground. We were inspired that the new leadership in D.C. was interested in this level of detail. What's working? What's broken? How can federal policies overcome the barriers and surface the best practices? I was recalling this morning that the idea of these listening sessions originally got hatched after a convening at Brookings. I think it was April 1st of 2008, and it wasn't an April Fool's joke, but the focus was on workforce housing solutions. Representatives from Atlanta and Minnesota, Chicago, New York, and a few other localities joined D.C. policy experts for the discussion. I think a major epiphany of that experience was how obvious it was to housing professionals that transportation incentives could go even further than housing subsidies in many cases to encourage the kind of political environment and zoning changes needed to encourage mixed income, mixed use housing options near good jobs, good schools, and good transit. Although the table set at that meeting largely included housing experts, including then New York housing leader Sean Donovan, many were municipal leaders who understood exactly how to make the case to their counterparts in transportation, how such housing near transit promoted ridership, safety, et cetera. That said, everybody also recognized the inevitable challenges involved with aligning housing and transportation efforts. Those involved in the two industries have such different timelines, you know, vocabularies, and masters in terms of their funding programs. Often the individuals involved don't get each other at all. And so we really left the meeting at Brookings that day, and when I say we, I mean the Center for Housing Policy and MPC, talking about how our lessons learned in working with employers and employer-assisted housing could advance these efforts. Many of you know that employer-assisted housing is a generic term to describe any number of ways employers engage in housing solutions for their workers. But increasingly, it's also a strategy for leveraging employer support and leadership of needed policy change and new development. In Chicagoland, where over 2,000 employees have purchased homes with employer assistance since 2000, we find that it's the employer's voice that finally motivates the bureaucracies to look past their differences and focus on the need for area workers to have access to quality housing near good transit and good jobs. It's a bottom-line economic stability issue for employers, and the program, Employers to Housing, helps introduce them to that self-interest, but obviously there are other ways to do that. If you go to our website, you'll see how employers like the University of Chicago can show not only the housing costs saved of employees who participate in their program, but also the tremendous transportation costs, how the program reduces their overall carbon footprint, et cetera. So in this market where many of us are struggling with, you know, the neighborhood stabilization program and generating buyer demand, employer-assisted housing is a proven strategy for getting employers not only to support their plan, but also to refer employees as buyers. Mayor Daley advanced the strategy with a plan for transformation, setting a 10% goal of local employees buying in these new mixed-income sites with local employer support. And I'll tell you, when the market tanked, we went up to 30% at times of buyers being from these programs. We've also seen this work in more expensive markets where there's great jobs and great transit and great schools, where it's the employers that really help build the political leadership for affordable housing in those neighborhoods. Thanks to National Housing Conference and its work on employers to housing nationwide, we've also my colleague Samantha DeCoven has provided tremendous technical assistance in places as diverse as Seattle and Mississippi and Northwest Indiana and Nevada and Cape Cod. And I encourage you to contact Samantha if you haven't met her yet to see if she could help you. But just to conclude, I think the key takeaways from the listening sessions were the 3 points that are highlighted on page 2 of the executive summary, which I hope most of you have. The 3 points were that it's very difficult to coordinate housing and transportation policy because, one, there's a lack of technical expertise at the local level. Two, there are these competing requirements and misaligned goals of the, in terms of the federal funding sources. And three, that the private sector is not sufficiently engaged. So if you go to the last page of the executive summary, we call out a number of opportunities out there that really helps address these challenges. And the Sustainable Communities Initiative itself and the new planning grants that are coming out, we think in April, start giving an incentive for housing, transportation, EPA leaders at the local level to align their own programs, and also creates challenge grants for towns really piloting efforts across borders. And again, we really think the engagement of employers in supporting that is key. Now, the Sustainable Communities Initiative, RFP, is only for $150 million this first year, and we're thrilled that at the national level, there's a bill called the Livable Communities Act that Senator Dodd introduced in the Senate and Representative Perlmutter in the House that really takes this pilot initiative to scale, turns it into more like a $4 billion effort with more challenge grants. And we are big supporters of the bill, but again, if you go on our website, you'll see we have a fact sheet that says we love the bill, but we want to create incentives for employer engagement in EAH in particular, because we think the sooner you get the business community at the table helping frame the discussion, the more viable these plans will be in the long run. And then, of course, the Center for Housing Policy piece talks at great length about the opportunities with the transportation bill. And I think I've already gone over my time allocation, so I will stop there and be available online for questions afterwards.
Thanks, Robin. Next, we're going to pass it on to Susan Adams of the Atlanta Neighborhood Development Partnership, who's going to talk about some local examples in the Atlanta region that touch on what Robin just spoke about with the coordination of housing, transportation, and workforce policies.
Thanks, Emily. As Emily mentioned, I am with Atlanta Neighborhood Development Partnership. We are a 20-year nonprofit focused on supporting affordable and mixed-income housing convenient to jobs and transportation in the metro Atlanta region. We work in 3 lines of business. We both develop mixed-income and affordable housing. We provide lending to both private and nonprofit developers of mixed-income and affordable housing. And we also work to support policies that are friendly to mixed-income housing. Currently, we are very engaged in addressing the foreclosure crisis in Metro Atlanta, and we are partners with 6 local jurisdictions in the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. We were very pleased to work with MPC and the National Housing Conference and the Cerdna Foundation in planning the listening session for Atlanta, and we had great response and strong participation from the nonprofit, academic, local government, and transportation sectors. But as Robin alluded to, in our Atlanta example, it was difficult to attract private sector employers and the business community to participate in the session. And I think that is something that would have enhanced the session and the discussion. We did have the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce engaged, but unfortunately, as I mentioned, not many private sector employers actually participated. That being said, there have been 2 critical activities since that convening in 2009 that really represent a cross-coordination here in Atlanta across both the housing and transportation sectors. The first is that there is a transit-oriented development working group that's been formed under the leadership of the Atlanta Regional Commission, our metropolitan planning organization, the Livable Communities Coalition, which is a nonprofit supporting smart growth here in Atlanta, and MARTA, our local transit authority. The TOD working group includes local governments and community improvement districts, as well as nonprofits like ANDP. And the goal is to encourage greater development and more density and more affordable housing at MARTA transit stations. There have been some good examples of development at MARTA transit stations, but we definitely have a lot of room for improvement there, and we think this TOD working group provides great momentum. The working group also worked very closely with MARTA to propose some draft affordable housing guidelines that MARTA could adopt, and the MARTA board is going to be voting on those at the end of the month. So that was a big first accomplishment. And we look forward to continued meetings of the TOD working group. Secondly, we in Atlanta, again under the leadership of the Atlanta Regional Commission in partnership with ANDP and other housing stakeholders, convene quarterly regional housing forums, and they're actually very well attended. We've had up to 250 participants at these quarterly sessions. And our next session, which is scheduled in June, is going to focus exclusively on TOD. This will be the second session focusing on TOD. And we are inviting representatives from Reconnecting America to participate. And again, we expect a good turnout and a good dialogue regionally about how to enhance TOD here in Metro Atlanta. So those are two activities that I wanted to talk about that have been significant since our 2009 convening with the listening session. And then I also wanted to follow up on Robin's comments on EAH. We were very fortunate to work with Samantha DeCoven at MPC in developing a pilot EAH program for Emory University. Emory University is one of the largest employers in the Atlanta region. They have a very large campus that includes both the university and their healthcare system in DeKalb County. The campus is located in a very congested and high-cost area of the county. And the university was very interested in reducing traffic congestion near the campus and eliminating some of their significant parking challenges. They also wanted to offer a cutting-edge benefit to their employees. We had several very productive discussions with the vice president, one of the vice presidents at Emory, and they were interested in linking the EAH program to a new development very close proximity to the Emory campus that was going to be a mixed-use townhome and condo development. Given sort of the current housing issues and challenges, that EAH initiative is on the back burner until development takes off at the site, which is probably not going to be for several months to a year. However, we're very excited about the prospects of working with Emory on the CAH initiative. Emory is a significant leader in Metro Atlanta, and we feel that if Emory takes a strong position on EAH and it's a good pilot, then other employers will follow. So we are very excited about that opportunity and look forward to revisiting it when the development market improves. And again, I'd like to say thank you to the National Housing Conference for sponsoring this forum, and we are excited about participating. And I will turn it back to Emily.
Thanks, Susan. I appreciate those remarks. Next, we're going to hear from Karen Dewar, who's at the Urban and Land Institute in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, ULI, Minnesota. So take it away, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you to all of you who are putting this together. It's really an interesting call. Well, as all of you know, the federal government is changing its criteria for how to invest transit dollars. And in the Twin Cities, in the next decade, we plan to invest billions of dollars into our region's transit system. And so we want to make sure that those dollars are maximized by private sector investment, including supporting a full range of housing choices and job growth. To realize this vision, it requires a cohesive, integrated regional framework that leverages and scales up the region's successful partnerships and effective delivery system and seizes on the opportunities to align the policies emerging from the federal livability principles and strategically target resources to unlock private capital. We think that the Southwest LRT, which is going to be our third light rail line here following Hiawatha and Central, provides a unique opportunity to use the lessons learned from Hiawatha and Central and the new federal focus on livability to support a comprehensive integrated approach across multiple municipal boundaries, where land uses become the placemaking strategies that will inform the design of the line and maximize transit investments. The Southwest LRT is the first opportunity to consider in our region to consider future land uses and their role in placemaking before the final transit alignment and station location decisions are finalized. It's also the first transit line that will span from a central city through several suburban communities with multiple land uses, financial hurdles, redevelopment and complexities, and very significant job growth potential with some job-rich employment centers. It's a 15-mile line that goes from Eden Prairie, Minnetonka, Edina, Hopkins, St. Louis Park, and Minneapolis, and connects in with Hiawatha, our North Star commuter rail, and Central Corridor and the region's bus network. We see this as a significant opportunity also to link low-income people with these job-rich locations in the suburbs. ULI Minnesota hosts, and along with its Regional Council of Mayors, hosted a multi-day workshop in the fall of 2009 and discussed the actions needed to maximize this development potential and the need for deliberate and early collaboration among the jurisdictions. I would point out that the workshops and the findings from those workshops are on our website, so if folks are interested in that, please check out minnesota.uli.org. After the workshop, the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners unanimously approved creating a Southwest Light Rail Transit Community Works Project. What's significant about this is it's going to create a table where the municipalities, the county commissioners, hopefully legislators, but very importantly, the employers along the line will sit at the same table and to catalyze coordinating the development and the public and private investments along the line to make sure that we maximize the line acting as a whole rather than as separate disconnected station stops. We're clearly interested in building on the opportunities with the New Starts program, where they're looking for mobility improvements, environmental benefits, operating efficiency, cost effectiveness, but transit supportive land use policies and future patterns. So we see this as a huge game-changing event. ULI is going to be providing technical assistance along with the Center for TOD to this Community Works project, looking to ensure that you end up with a full range of housing choices, that job growth increases, that it benefits regional economic competitiveness. Sorry about that. I'm getting another call, and you're hearing the beep in the background, perhaps. We're bringing other partners to the table, including the Family Housing Fund and the McKnight Foundation and LISC. I would add that part of our work has been to analyze how our employment centers in the region hook up with the transit center. We did some significant mapping with CTOD to identify those employment centers, and certainly the Southwest LRT line is a key part of that. Without this comprehensive approach, you'd end up with a series of station areas that are disconnected. So our work is really to do three things. One is to raise awareness and cultivate those partnerships and convene stakeholders that I mentioned. Second is to develop a cohesive corridor TOD investment framework that will bring all the elements together and create a work plan that is strategic and incremental. As you know, most of you know, when you do station area planning, you're really planning out for 20 to 30 years, and those station areas never get built that way. So we're going to be working along with our partners to create transitional plans to ensure that we realize the results we're looking for. And then finally, to identify funding strategies to attract the financial resources. So we're really excited about bringing the various stakeholders together around a common table and implementing the corridor in a way that we haven't been able to do here.
Thanks, Karen. Thank you, Robin, Susan, and Karen, for the great overview that provided both of the Sustainable Communities Partnership, but also the local examples of cross-silo collaboration. I think there's a lot to learn from those examples that you shared, and hopefully we can generate some great online discussion based on what you mentioned on the phone. So in a couple minutes, we'll move on to the second portion of the event, which is the online question and answer session.